Comics, California. Yeah. Meltdown Comics. Yeah. Nerd Melt Theater.
Sing it, Freddie. Guess what, everybody? Harmontown is now in session. Welcome to the stage, the mayor of Harmontown, Dan Harmon.
Thank you. And a weird thing happened there, because I heard cheering and I was preoccupied and we're relaxed now. We've done a lot of these shows, so I was kind of like, I was just coming in and I thought for a second, because I heard cheering and then I heard silence, and then I looked and I thought I ran up halfway because I thought you had introduced me and I was
right
lagging, and then I came up halfway and froze like a rabbit, and then you finished introducing me, during which I kind of slinked back like a cobra, and then I sprang up. It was the podcast introduction equivalent of two guys in the men's room doorway when you're kind of like, you don't know.
Yeah, I normally try to keep the thing rolling and you know, like, logically when it's time for you to come up. But I was moved by a Queen musical interlude to pause for a moment.
Ah, see, yeah.
Or as they say in music, I went tacit.
Jeff, you know how the people have the "What would Jesus do?" It's a question they ask themselves. Keeps them on point.
Yes,
in a Christian sense, what would Jesus do? It's a yardstick. It's a guideline. I decided today, this morning, I have a new Twitter guideline, which is why is Tony Danza following me? How do I make that keep happening?
how long has he been following
you? I'm not sure. I don't know if there's a... Was there a way to know that?
Yeah, can you date stamp when somebody started following you?
Yeah. That sounds like an invasion of privacy that I don't think this society would put up with.
Well, but how do you use why is Tony Danza following me as a yardstick of morality?
Because it's you know how when you're in an argument you should stop and take deep breaths.
Oh,
breaths aren't good. It's like letting your auto-not, whatever shit you're in, just step back and imagine Tony Danza's watching. for me, maybe it's a different person for you guys. Like it's just like, it's not because I'm afraid of letting Tony Danza down, but I also don't have contempt for him. Right. So it's like he's kind of like the ultimate stranger, the ultimate boss. Somebody, I'm not sure if he's the boss, but he's. I don't know. It's just the idea that Tony Danza, like it would be a nightmare for me to have Tony Danza be reading me, getting into arguments about, you know, political correctness or something with a 17-year-old or something. And not my worst nightmare, but it's just like, it's a nightmare that keeps you in check. It's like Tony Danza's picking out a shirt and he's looking through his phone and he's like, yeah, I don't need this. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't buy a ticket to this ride.
But there's a possibility that, like, you've done something right to make Tony Danza follow you. Yeah. And then maybe you could cross a line and do something that would make him not follow you so that you could use that as a moral compass.
Like, yeah. But I mean...
What would Tony Danza unfollow me
for doing?
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyways, I don't know. Just give it a shot. See if it changes your behavior this week.
But there's no control group. We don't know what you did that made him follow you. It might have been bad behavior. We don't know.
Yeah, he might have been like, I like that guy. He's bad. He's like me. He's like young Tony Danza. He's got spunk.
Well, yeah, but somebody said there was a Community episode where we referenced Who's the Boss and stuff. But he's following like 1,300 people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he
casts a wide net.
You know
who else cast a wide net? Jesus.
Yeah.
He's a fisherman of followers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's that story about the two footprints, and then Jesus says, like, that was when I was checking my Tumblr. Dumb. That was dumb. But it was improvised,
it was close.
It's allowed to be kind of dumb.
It was so close that if you didn't back off it would have stood as a good joke.
Yeah, I guess. Well, like if I hadn't put those like Woody Allen hesitations in there, I don't know. I think that's the salt on my steak.
Wait,
which is good for me. I like salty steak.
But you hesitate a lot.
Yeah, then that's always me salting my food. Like for their food. I'm putting a little pepper on it, but with my little stammers, I kind of like, I'm not sure about this.
Wait, they're premeditated?
Oh, yeah. Everything's...
Wait, all the time you're stammering is a huge Woody Allen construct that you have a complete handle on?
Yeah. I could talk about anything as if I'm totally confident in myself, one likes that. That's uncharismatic.
Dan, just to try it out, let's spend the next 3 or 4 minutes where you never stammer. Even if the show... Even if the show should suffer for your, for us losing that timing and that.
Show you what I mean, yeah. I will do this for you.
All right, nice and clean.
Moving on, can we continue with the rest of the podcast?
I would love to, Dan.
All right, then we shall. Moving on to our corrections section. This is the moment of the show when we correct things that we've done wrong, Jeff, in the past.
Wait, are you implying that we've ever said anything wrong?
Even things that we think we might have done wrong is worth a correction. It tells the people listening that we care. And by I don't mean
You meant to say like, oh,
I'm absolutely positive. Our first correction is this is the thing that I wanted to correct last week, Jeff. Remember when I mentioned that guy that said that the podcast got him through Hurricane Sandy?
Yes.
To me, it sounded when I listened to it as if I was rolling my eyes when I described it a little bit. Do you remember what I'm talking about? When I listened back to me, it sounded as if I was mocking or ironic about how I appreciated the guy and how much he liked Harmontown and how he said it had gotten him through Hurricane Sandy. I had a certain patois in my voice. Our sarcastic patois. I said at the end of it, I said, and it got him through Hurricane Sandy. And it sounded like my head was wiggling and my eyes were rolling. And that was absolutely not the intention. I was very flattered by this gentleman. I spoke with him in the parking lot. I had a wonderful time with him. So wherever you are, mister, whatever your name is, I love you. What's that? Someone say something? And of course not. This is a very structured show.
And so far, no stutters.
Yeah, and don't you think it's gotten more boring? And
No.
Less charming? Don't you trust me less? No, I sound like Walter Cronkite.
I actually think the show is better when it's clearer and there's more articulation.
It's making me very nervous.
Well, what we've created is a balloon full of tension, and the moment you stutter, it's going to be a
You're letting pain. It out. You're like, it's like a tantrum when you stutter.
Oh, that was almost
a stutter. Oh, boy. All right.
It's almost...
Moving on to our next topic. Yes.
Is this a topic where you go back in time and talk like somebody from the 1890s?
Well, this is how people talk when they're not stuttering. They talk like their words are scripted.
You're on thin ice. When you start riffing.
Jeff, I was very amused to have a Twitter exchange on Twitter today. In speaking about net neutrality, I threw out what I thought was a reasonable metaphor. I was trying to behoove people. God damn it. I was trying to get people to understand the importance of gatekeeping within media by using the example of pre-Lutheran Vatican-endorsed Latin Bible.
To be quite honest, I haven't heard a thing you said since you weren't stuttering, because I'm trying to be the stutter cop right now.
Well, listen to what I'm saying,
okay.
Jack.
All right. Jeff.
I reached in warning about the... You made me do that. I said in warning to... I had max headroomed on the in warning because of what you said about counting my stutters. If I'm conscious of you counting my stutters, I'm going to stutter.
Now I'm not. I let it go.
All right.
All I'm saying is that I have the song queued up if you do stutter. There is a musical sting that might happen.
I might have to speak more slowly.
Well, take a breath.
Don't tell me what to do.
You see how good that felt and how good that sounded? Nobody don't tell me what to do.
When I start stuttering again, I'd like to talk about that impression and how hurtful it is. But right now, I'm cool as a cucumber and know everything I'm about to say, even before I say it.
What if you made it through the whole show and never stuttered?
It would be boring, is my prediction.
I see. I think not. I think that.
I think it would lose something. I think it would be like eating a boiled yam, as opposed to a fresh, crisp.
Right out of the ground.
Everyone loves a dirty, raw, wonderful, earth-nurtured yam. Yeah. Just with the bugs still on it, pull it out of the ground.
And asking the question, why did we ever boil yams? These things don't need our help.
This is a hate crime, boiling this yam. This thing was perfect. God wanted this in my mouth. I can't believe he grew it in the ground. Normal people say sometimes.
We're not going to call us or stutter. We're talking about the... Dan, I'm only going to bust you on... Or not bust you. I'm only going to like throw the flag on the play.
When it goes off the rails.
When you go like... Also, I do that too.
All right.
Someone just laughed like that. Guys, laugh as a stutter.
Okay, what were we talking about? Could you please remind me?
Bible.
Net neutrality?
Latin.
Bible. Latin Bible's net neutrality. Thank you very much, you scattered people. It must be strange to be so unfocused. I bet you wish you could speak publicly. Anyhow. Speaking about net neutrality on Twitter today, I used that metaphor for the dangers of gatekeeping in society. Remember when Bibles were only in Latin? Poor people couldn't know Latin. You had to access God through another class of people. I didn't think anybody thought that that was ever a good thing. This guy took exception to my comments, which I found amazing.
Which guy?
This guy. Just a guy. I mean, I have 250,000 followers. You'd expect that if I talked about...
Braggle brag.
Excuse me, sir. My intention was not,
what do you mean,
not
which?
To hurt your feelings.
What do you mean, which guy?
Believe me, sir, the volume of my followership, it mitigates the quality of my life. It's a burden I bear. I'm not bragging, I'm complaining. If I were to talk about zebras...
By trying not to stammer, you get a little British.
I'm thinking about what I'm saying.
Maybe get like Game of Thrones, like your favorite like British character, and see if that elongates your vowels and helps you out.
Don't, come on.
I'm just trying to help, man.
It seems like you're not trying to help.
I am. No, I'm absolutely trying to help.
It seems like you're Camp Mohawk in Meatballs and I'm doing a teacup race.
For two people.
A lot of gray-haired men pumping their fists right now. And by a lot, I mean two.
No. I'm definitely the evil ski instructor right now.
So.
You can't make it down the slope, Dan.
Don't frazzle me.
I'm trying to help, I swear to God.
This young gentleman was, to me, absurdly defensive of the Holy Roman Empire. I thought I had seen everything. We are getting dangerously close to the day, and you'll call this an exaggeration. Some people will call this offensive in and of itself, but it feels as though we are getting dangerously close to the day when someone's finally, once and for all, going to say on the internet, I'm sick and tired of this Hitler metaphor being a can we can just kick whatever we want. Hitler this, Hitler that. Like, he's just the definition of bad. How do you think that makes me feel as a Hitler lover? We're getting pretty close to that because this guy was, he was up in arms. He said,
Ozzy, okay.
Hmm. He said, his point was that he is a Catholic churchgoer. According to his biography on Twitter, he's a polyglottist. What do they call themselves? Polyglot. Yes. Okay.
Who speaks multiple languages?
Yeah. One of them being Latin. He goes to Latin Mass. He's tired of this stereotype, I think, where people that speak Latin are just a bunch of assholes. And the world history idea that we all learned in world history. Maybe this is an American thing. Maybe this guy lives in Frankfurt. Maybe he lives in Rome. I don't know. But it made me think, holy cow, really anything. No sooner have you conquered something than something becomes the underdog. I was kind of not realizing that I was just using the Vatican as a whipping boy because it's an easy, because I thought no one could get offended. Like, but what about people who love the Vatican? There's a million of them.
There's a couple hundred million of them, I'm sure. Or a billion, yeah. So are you on the side of the Catholic Church now?
I have always been on the side of anyone who wants to atone with the unknown through a religion of their choosing. I would never want to be guilty of impinging on anyone's freedom of religion. I think that's terrible. That's why I've stood up here before, and it's been kind of weird minefield because we have a very intelligent group of kids who come to us. By the way, I love you guys. You're my kids.
Except for the four gray-haired guys who know meatballs.
Also my children. And I theirs. I learn from you guys. We are a happy family. I would never change a single one of you. Except Keith in the back. And, I'm just kidding. There's no Keith.
Are there any Keiths here tonight? Wow.
I went to Duncan Trussell's live podcast at the Improv. I talked a little bit about God there, and I got applauded for it. You guys give me a hard time. You're very atheistic, very intelligent, very skeptical people. It's very strange. I imagine there's got to be a huge overlap between Duncan's audience and this audience, right?
What did you say about God there? Maybe they would have applauded the same monologue here. Here, you came down...
No, like, because
you tried to start your own religion a while ago. And you were roundly booed for that. I would guess on Duncan Trussell's show, you came in a little lower than Jim Jones.
I can't... Well, speaking smoothly, I can't interject and jackhammer you out of this.
Dan, you're off the hook. You made it. Dan Harper didn't start. That's the music that would have played if you had stuttered.
Like mocking asylum music. What was that? Boogie boogie. All right.
You made it a good, 10, 15 minutes?
I don't like that guy. I don't think... That seems like a boring, like old school radio.
What it was because it was so measured, it sounded really intimidating that you were holding something back that might have, like, you were not saying what you really meant.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was scary. I prefer the other version.
Yeah, you want to know what's for sale here. What's going on behind my ears? No one came here because I went to broadcasting school. Yeah. I did not slave for hours, years, decades, millennia in the stand-up mines.
You notice that you haven't stuttered since we stopped.
I'll do it on purpose, but whatever. But I'm just saying, like, when I want to find the words,
yeah,
Whatever. How did we get on this? What is this? Like,
it wasn't us making fun of you stammering. I stammer and stutter and mumble and all kinds of shit. It was an experiment.
All right.
That's not all right.
God and atheism and meatballs.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, you guys, you.
Wait, yeah. So you're accusing this crowd of hating you loving God or hating you hating God? Or
Our crowd has a little bit less, you know. Duncan talks a lot about religious pursuits on his podcast. He has religious experiences. He's really into Ram Dass and eating things that make you see that sheep are watching and whatever. He reads books.
Or that mushroom Jesus thing.
And so his crowd includes more. I think the fringe of his audience I picture as being like genuinely like almost tie-dyed in silhouette.
Tie-dyed in silhouette?
I was trying to think of tie-dyed.
That's the most poetic thing you've ever said.
I should have just said tie-dyed.
Yeah.
And then the fringe of our audience, I think, is has actual surgically augmented pointed ears. These are fringes, and I love all of those people. I don't know who of those two I love more, but those two, and sometimes you might see a really nice, fun road movie about those two having to cross the country together. They often travel in the same circles because neither of them would judge each other. But one guy is like, I beg to differ about the thing that you said the other day. I did some research myself. And then the other guy is like, yeah, that's what I keep saying. Let's get naked. No, Keith, we're not. Stop pushing your nude agenda. You look great in tie-dye. Leave it at that. And I was just like in that show, I don't know, I just kind of, we were talking about writing and the creative process. I got a little spiritual about it, and I felt less punished than I do here sometimes. It's because you're smart.
I know. Whereas Duncan Trussell's audience,
they're not. No, they're not the opposite of smart. I was trying to make them feel better, not make other people feel worse. I shouldn't have gone down this road. Boy, that guy that defended Latin, what an asshole.
Wait. So his angle was he's tired of having Latin kicked around the block.
Yeah, his I mean, I would happily do if somebody could pull up the Twitter conversation, we could do like a love letters thing. But I lack the facility. I think I'm just looking at my Evernote thing, which I think is it's all tapped except for Aaron went to this camp last 3 days. Aaron was at a special camp for hipsters. I think.
It's called Server Lake.
That sounds dismissive. I think it's better to say it was a camp for hipsters instead of saying what it is, so that you're silently in your head going, "So a hipster camp?" I think you can. They were very activated young independent business entrepreneurs who were teaching each other and learning from each other how to live in a new world business wise on the internet and whittle and make s'mores and like they did camp stuff, but
punch
they were,
leather and shit.
But they were doing camp stuff and having like seminars and stuff, and but weirdly, counterintuitively, whereas if you go to like XOXO, it's like, holy shit, here's your hashtag, here's your thing. I mean, because obviously we're fucking, this conference is about technology, where we encourage you to gram it and tumble it and flip its face nipple.
Flip its face nipple.
It's new, it's face nipple. NIPPL. But in brackets, with a two after it for no reason. But this place, they took their phones.
Where was this
place? And they never gave them back.
Okay.
They had to whittle new phones before they were allowed to leave.
Until you tell me, or Aaron tells me otherwise, I'm imagining they're all in teepees up in Big Bear.
It was Big Bear.
Really?
Yeah. I know, because Aaron left her luggage there. And I said, where was this place? I didn't even know where she was. It occurred to me, like, what if she had gotten hurt?
Wait, you can bring luggage but not a phone. It's in Big Bear.
Yeah, you can bring. Bring your phone, but it's gone for 3 days.
Do you stay in a tent?
Well,
a cabin?
That is a question she'll have to answer. I knew she'd come back with one good story. My definition of a good story is always a lot of Schadenfreude and pain and like just unfairness happening in front of everybody.
What's the name of this convention or this camp? And I want to know how it all began. And is this the first or 17th year or like? I want to know all about this.
Well, she'll give you all the details. Okay. Why don't we just bring her up? Aaron, are you? I wish that had gone on for 10 minutes. She was just...
World's best podcast!
She was staring off into space like an autistic 6-year-old while doing a Bobby Brown derived hoochie gyration. Yeah. But it was combined with a strange final episode of Saint Elsewhere, just gazing up to the point where I thought it was going to be one of those stories where, and then we realized she was in insulin shock, and we didn't know she would. That's when we took her to the emergency room. They said she's been diabetic for 6 years.
Oh boy! That last night at the last night of camp, there was a dance, and it was future themed. So I dressed as, I dressed as Barf from Spaceballs, and I bought this giant.
A lot of Spaceballs fans.
I bought this giant coverall thing in like 7X because I wanted. I was gonna stuff it, but I didn't. And I realized halfway through the dance that you couldn't see my body moving, like I was working so hard to dance, but it just looked like I was all covered up.
Like a bobblehead?
Yeah. I was drunk and I like took a rope and I was like trying to tie it around my waist and I was trying to explain to people like, I've been dancing.
I've been cheating you of moves. I've got to get a leash around them so I can take them around.
I've been jiggy the whole time.
So the camp, it's put on by this really great organization in LA called Unique LA. Is anyone familiar with Unique LA? Woo! Woo! God, yeah! They have a building.
And the crowd went, whoa.
they have a building called the Unique Space in downtown LA. And it's just about like, I don't know, cultivating community between like artists and entrepreneurs and they do a lot of like made in LA type things. And so the camp is called the Unique Camp. And it's a camp, their acronym is Cultivate Ambition Map Possibilities. I mean, come on, haters. chill out.
I tell you, they hate God too.
Well,
Cultivate
ambition, map possibilities. Just because they wanted to. Basically, it's like it's just people that
they
love.
They wanted to spell the word
camp. It's people that love.
Yes. Chocolate, almonds, marzipan,
creative,
pussy.
Ambitious, multi-ethnic progress.
It's basically just this very fun camp-themed thing where different like creative people that are. It's mostly like self-made people that are. Artists and business. I really had no business being there. Like over, I kept on changing my introduction because like in every group you have to say like I'm so and so and I founded Eco Shoes and I'm like I'm Aaron and I
invented calcium.
I was the fireman with the GoPro on his head when that kitten got oxygen. I assume that was more viral than maybe it was.
No, it's pretty viral. Yeah.
What was yours, Aaron? Jeff went, then I went.
now it's your turn to make fun of you.
But it's very neat if you're looking at Phoenix Space.
You said you changed your introduction. What was the evolution of your introductions?
This is humiliating. I think my first introduction I said I do. Hi, I'm Mary McGathy. I mean, because the truth is, like, I went because, like, I have all these different interests, and I have my fingers in so many different pies, and I guess technically I'm a freelancer, but I have my podcast and performing, but I make things, and so I'm just trying to like figure that all out. And so that's why I went, just for fun. And I also love summer camp. I just got back a couple hours ago. I'm very sunburnt, and I feel a little woozy from the elevation.
What was the list of things
sorry.
Driving up there in the car, your introduction that you had planned for it was what?
Well, I did not plan an introduction. I was very intimidated by the groups because, like I'm saying, like there is an astronomer who studies black holes at Dartmouth. And there is, like, you know, all these people that have created all these things that a lot of you guys, I'm sure, use. But so I was like, hi, I'm Aaron. I do comedy and, like, stuff, and sometimes I bake a cake, and okay. You know, once I wrote something, so I was like, hey, I'm a writer, and, but, like, not really, not actively, but, like, okay. that's going to be so annoying to hear on the podcast. I'm sorry, listeners. I hate it when I do that Bobcat voice. I refined it to, I host a podcast called This Feels Terrible, and I do these other things, and I want to kind of bring them all together and figure out how to like cultivate the community of that. And so.
All right, so took Erin out to dinner. I didn't take her out. She took me out. Wait, took each other out.
You took me out. I paid for valet.
All right.
Yeah.
We haven't been apart more than, well, this is probably the longest we've ever been apart.
Yeah,
right?
And definitely the longest without talking.
And I was so excited because I knew something, there's got to be something. And you did not disappoint after a lot of boring stuff about this hunky astronomer guy that swept you off your feet.
Never. His name is Kevin. And he's. He's amazing. He's going to be my next guest on This Feels Terrible. He's really incredible. He like knows all the stuff about black holes, and he's a huge fan of Rick and Morty. And
which is supposed to make me feel good when he's fucking you. Hi, honey, I'm home. You better love my cartoon, mister. Finish up and get out of here. Or stay, we'll play catchphrase later.
Oh, and Jeff, I made a bunch of people play catchphrase. So alienated a lot of people with the rules.
Who ran it?
Well, come on. Well, so I mean,
All right. So
anyway.
The horse story.
The horse story.
So Aaron tells
the horse story.
The horse story.
Okay.
I think this is like, to me, this is like a parable. What happened?
I mean, you're building it up. I'm going to make myself comfortable. So yesterday, you know what, guys? I'm just going to be myself. And myself wants to be comfortable. So yesterday,
did you learn that at camp?
she learned. Technically, she learned it from Kevin under the stars.
Yeah. Gravity is like just another stool under your feet.
That's Cassiopeia up there. You know, she sacrificed herself for her lover. Oh, I wish I knew someone. Blah, 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 blah.
Speaking of holes.
Kevin, the stars aren't under my blouse. I definitely have the glow of camp. Dan didn't recognize me when I came to the car.
Well, you were wearing this knit shawl. Is that an accurate description?
Yeah.
Like a knit shawl and a baseball cap.
Because I won a scavenger hunt, so I got a baseball cap.
And I looked right at her, and then just went right back to listening to Radiolab, waiting for my fiance to come to the car. But and then the car door opened. I went because this knit shawl scavenger from Sector 7. this person that was dressed unlike anything I'd ever seen Aaron in, like was coming into my car. I was like, oh my God, you're not the strange, I don't know. For some reason, I have no idea what happened, but in my head, you were an Asian woman. I just projected a race onto you.
Yeah.
I don't know if that,
well,
to me that's an
outside.
Asian shawl, or I don't know what was in my head, because obviously
all those knit shawl ball cap wearing Asians.
Well, I mean, let's not.
So like Dan was saying, at the camp there are all these camp activities that you could do in addition to these workshops, and I signed up for horseback riding, and it was the last horseback riding session of the weekend. This was last night. And they said on the sheet, come right at 5 o'clock because you know, they didn't explain why.
Take our word for it. You want to ride a horse? There's an appointment involved.
And I was very excited. So I was like 10 minutes early and was like, you know, looking at the horses and you know, imagining which one I would ride. And there were like 10 other women who showed up exactly on time. We get this talk from the horse training person who says, yeah, I'm so glad you guys are here on time because it's so important for us all to be here on time and all hear this explanation together because these horses are very particular and we get on these logs with what do you call horse ropes?
Reins.
Horse ropes.
Or leaders.
Reins. Okay. So we...
horse ropes. They should just call them horse ropes for God's... Well, I'm sure there's a lot of ropes you use with horses.
So we're sitting on these logs. We go through this entire training session with this woman, and we see somebody walking from the camp because the horse stuff is kind of far away from the bunks and everything. We see someone walking, and the leader like waves at her. Is like, "Are you horse?" And she just kind of casually waves back, and she does a like hurry, and the woman just walks at her same pace. Like, she's a very fit, athletic young woman just like walking slowly while she's going over this thing. So the instructor's like, okay, well, we'll move on. And clearly this person's just taking a walk and was waving. Eventually this woman arrives and she's come after the entire explanation. And the leader, the horse instructor lady said, she's about to say, sorry, you can't ride with us because you've missed the explanation and we have to go now. And she's like, hey. And the woman's like, oh, don't worry. I ride. I'm very comfortable. To the horse instructor lady. And we're all like, oh, God. just very, so proud and so shitty and very comfortable. And then the woman's like, oh, but you need to, like, I'll go over the stuff with you because just legally you
which, like,
have
even
to...
if even if she was an expert, like, steeplechase Olympian... we already know two things about this stranger. One is that she may or may not know anything about horses, but we know she knows nothing about group dynamics. she has walked into a group of people who have she's 15 minutes late and she's just announcing to all of these strangers here, it's all right. I'm an expert.
Yeah.
Also, I've been around enough horse lady instructors to know that the first 15 minutes is all bullshit.
Yeah.
I'll get there when the horse riding starts.
Yeah. The horses tend to learn a thing or two from me, tell you the truth.
And also, like, the instructions were a favor to all of us, which they are.
As we will learn.
Yeah. So we're assigned horses, and as they're assigning horses, the horse instructor lady, the hill, says, it's very important when we go out that we stay in the line that we go out in because horses are like people and they dislike some horses and they like other horses. And some of these horses are very particular and like it's very important that you stay in this specific line. So we know that. We get on our horse. My horse's name is Bergen. And we're sitting... Sorry, I was just thinking about Bergen.
Bergen.
So we get on the horses, and I know that during this time, like, she's going over this explanation with this woman who's ridden horses and is very comfortable. We get on the horses. There's a pin where you go in, like, a circle just so you get used to controlling your horse and going in this line. So the horse instructor lady leads us out in this line, and we start going around in the circle. I'm second in this line, and this woman who is very comfortable on horses is kind of towards the back of this line of 10 horses. We're going this line, like, from the very beginning, the horse instructor lady is saying to the I'm going to call her Blondie. She was blonde. So she says to Blondie, no, you're out of line. You're cut, because she was taking, her horse was going, like, in the middle of the ring. Everybody else is in this line, and this woman who's so familiar and comfortable with horses, her horse is, like, kind of veering out. And the lady is like, no, you need to go back. You need to go back. And she's not, she's trying. And she says, you need to go back. And then Blondie says, look, I heard you.
She's put off by all the all right already. I don't know how to ride a horse. I get it.
And but the woman's like, no, this is actually important. Like the
is she leading her horse? Is she coloring outside the lines? Like
I don't know. Yeah, is she like, you know what? This is beginner shit. This horse is gonna ride an elephant while I ride the horse. I'm gonna. Where's
the? Yeah. Well, and while because she's out of the line, the order gets all fucked up because the horses are used to like traveling pretty close to each other. So we're on our second go around this ring. We're about to go out on the trail. We're coming around the side of it, and the blondie is trying to get her horse back into this line of horses. And as she does that, she spooks the horse in front of her, and the horse freaks out. I've never seen anything like this. The horse gets really scared, and horses are big.
As big as a horse.
As big as a horse.
They could eat a smaller horse.
When they get hungry, they just lick their hooves. So the horse gets super spooked and throws this nice mother off of the horse, bucks, and like she falls to the ground. The horse is going. Ah!
Now, try again. It's okay to get it wrong the first time.
We just find out you don't know what a even in a speak and spell.
I thought that I really
just try to put yourself back in that moment and do the horse thing.
I really thought I was gonna have a Michael Winslow moment. I thought that was gonna be really amazing.
Just let it go. Just try one more time. It's like the mother.
Okay.
I think that's a swamp horse. I think we're.
I think there was a loon. Certainly a loon. All right.
So a woman
is dead or maimed. Or
she gets thrown off the horse, and the everybody's silent, and the instructor's like, still, everyone be still, don't move, and she has to jump off her horse and calm down this horse and keep her from smashing in this mother's head. And so she calms down the horses. Everybody's silent. She's still telling the women to be quiet. She takes the spooked horse back into the stable, and then we all follow suit. This woman is still on the ground. So we don't know if she's dead or if she's just being still because she needs to be safe, obviously. We get all our horses tied up, and then she's like, I call out like, are you okay? Not that I'm the hero, but I asked her if she was okay. And she was okay. They called the medics over, and she was fine. She was bruised up. She was just still because she was told that she was supposed to be still. And we get all tied up with the horses, and everyone is, I mean, I know, I don't know how everyone is feeling. I was feeling so happy that this woman's head wasn't smashed in. And I hear Blondie on the other side of the stable say, so are we not going out?
She can't get a break. I had the shittiest day today. They started horse class too early. Then the bitch teaching it tells me I gotta learn it anyway. Then some other bitch's horse throws her off. When's it gonna be Natalie time?
What? Natalie time!
What do you think her deal was? Do you think that she used to ever ride a horse, or that she was cocky and she was just like, or she just was full of shit?
I mean,
what business did she start? I want to know about that too.
Well, it's an overused term, but I'm going to go sociopath on the. I'm going to say her general problem is that she has no fucking empathy.
Or was she like such a good horse rider? She's like. Like there's a horse or anything. I grew up around horses. I've been riding horses since I was a little girl, and you know these trained horses, like they don't want to ride in a line, man. I'm gonna go outside the line, and she fucked up and spooked the horses. Did she fly too close to the sun, or is she just a complete lunatic?
Well, I don't know the answers to all those questions, but I just want to say in response to that, if she was. Any of that, if it was did come from a place of her being a horse expert or anything like that, She's also a sociopath just from her behavior. No chimpanzee walks into a group of chimpanzees where they're outnumbered and goes like, "Head chimp here, out of my way. Not sorry I'm late. Sorry you're early. Any mistakes will be on me because no one would bother to write that insurance
and
check.
No concern for the woman that had fallen. Like, was she okay?
She was okay, but no, that woman showed no concern.
She didn't connect those dots.
No.
She didn't go. You know,
cause and effect.
Can't help but feel like it's a little bit on me. The story would still. She'd still be a shitty person, even if at the end she was kind of like, "Huh, I kind of feel like maybe I should have just come on time." Like, it'd still be like, "Yeah, fuck you." But she didn't even do that. She's like, you know, if this class is going to take any longer and involve less full speed horse riding, I want my money back.
So the end, the ride was over, canceled.
The riding was over. Everybody left except for me and a couple other women that wanted to hang out with the goats and the. And there's like a little.
I think you
goat.
Buried the lead on this story.
There are these goats and this llama that I had become kind of close to, so I was.
What's this camp called? Unique. It is a unique.
What
camp.
If it was a? What if it was just a dream I had?
So I have a quick beef that I didn't talk to you about.
But really quick, the reaction afterwards, like, it was obvious what had happened, but the way that everyone said to each other, like almost in a way to deal with the trauma, like, "Oh, well, I heard horses just do that sometimes. Like, they just, like, there's no predicting what happened. Like, maybe a bee, like, flew in the horse's nose," or, but it was so clear what had happened. And I kept on, like, looking around at people's eyes, like, "Is anyone else gonna talk about this?" But no one else. Even the woman that was injured, like, didn't.
Really?
Like, I think she knew, I don't
she
know.
She was injured?
Well, the woman who fell off, she was bruised up, and she was very sweet, but she was very excited that she was the one who got thrown off the horse. So, yeah, I mean, she's, you know, some people are happier when they're the injured one. And
well, she was there. Her business was thrownoffahorse.com.
No, but she's
the blog. It's like
she's well, no, that's not fair. I want to retract that. She was very sweet, and then the woman that was the you're calling her a sociopath. She deals with luxury eyewear. And she looks...
Case closed.
I didn't even say that as a thing, but all right. So, sorry, what was your beef?
Oh, well, I saw Tom Kaufman at the Rick and Morty's writer's room.
Because he's a writer there.
Yes. I see, yes. He looked on Instagram. There were people... somebody took a photo at Unique Camp. That's my beef. Somebody
well,
had their phone.
Because Unique Camp and that whole scene, they're very good with all their social media stuff. There were 10 or 20 photographers the entire time. But, like, all the pictures from camp are already up.
Right.
And, like, they were, the people that were in charge of the camp were Instagramming.
Yeah. I don't know. A society where you can't Instagram, but the government can. Makes me nervous.
Aaron, so you said you changed your description of yourself. What did it evolve to later on?
I already said.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought there was more evolution to that.
At the end, I was like, scuba.
I invented the space shuttle.
Scuba surgery.
Now, did you come away from other than a good horse story, did you come away with any insights or any knowledge, like any good things you can apply to your life?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Prove
yeah.
Prove it.
Prove it. I will. You'll see in the next 5 years. No, I mean, the thing I took away was just integrating all of my skills into, like, one finite thing. And I was talking to Dan about a project I'm very excited about. I'll tell you about it too. Oh, thank you for applauding. It's killing Jews.
She got
for the podcast listener, I just said it's killing Jews because people were applauding a project without knowing what it was, and Hitler was mentioned earlier.
I thought you said it's canned juice.
Okay, now that we're all full disclosure, I thought she said cunt juice. I love that the real thing
can we combine all three of those things?
Look, I know I have something going on, really great going on here, and I've got to share
it. I invented canned juice.
Canned juice. No, it's not canned juice. It's a very obvious thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't it suck that every joke is this kite that we fly now, and it has to have this tail on it to keep it from crashing into...
Oh, God. Well, in full disclosure, because of what I just said, I did not hear the word kite.
Yeah.
You heard kike because you hate the Jews.
Didn't she just say that? Wasn't that the dot you were connecting?
Yeah.
I'm one step behind.
Anyways, but fuck that. Who cares? The only worst thing is fucking talking about it. Let's this neo-fascist movement fucking eat itself. And I will be silently watching in the corner with a big bag of popcorn. Because I can make jokes about kittens, man.
Let's hear one.
When you told me that horse story, it made me flash back to when you told me once when you were a kid. You were like this obnoxious kid, and one of the things you did when you were like, how old were you? And you did the exact same thing that this woman did in the story, except you were a kid. You went to like this horse riding thing, and you were just like this sweet little girl and told them, like, I ride horses all the time. Total lie.
Yeah. It was when my family lived overseas, and we were exploring around England, and I went to this thing, and I told them that I had a bunch of horse riding experience.
Because you wanted the fastest horse, or you thought you were going to get a shitty horse if you told them weren't?
I feel like other people can relate to this. And I don't, maybe not just exclusively women, but like it feels like with horses, like, oh, I know. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't seem like if you haven't ridden a horse, it feels like, well, we'll just get each other.
And then you just like that. You just got on the horse and sounds like a Farrelly Brothers movie. You got on the horse and just fucking and the horse
everybody was in a line, but I had talked about how great I was at riding horses, and this nice teacher like wanted to empower me, I guess, and everybody was strapped with rope to rope and I had never ridden a horse, and I was like, this is my chance, and I did what I had seen in the movies, and we took off down the mountainside, and the instructor had to go after me because I immediately was like, ah! Clearly, like, had never, you know, when you see it in the movies, it just, I mean, National Velvet was my favorite movie as a kid, and I just figured, oh, I'll just bear down and I'll be fine.
I love that all your childhood stories are stories about you just like
being the worst,
like leaping and then maybe glancing where you've leapt. You're just kind of like, I'm gonna do this, and then you're like,
Aaron, was Blondie you?
She was the shadow you cast.
No, I do like her confidence was pretty amazing. I think she was very petite and looked very young for her age. And I wonder if maybe like because people usually see her as like a young
woman. And condescend to her.
Like she needs to approach situations that way.
She's
like,
probably gotten way more, especially as someone who lives in America and makes, what did you call it? Fashion eyewear.
luxury eyewear,
somebody whose job does not usually involve like hand-to-hand combat. I don't know what.
I
bet she's gotten way more positive results. But the ratio of positive results to negative results for false kind of forced assertiveness higher.
It seemed like bad behavior from someone who's not necessarily a bad person. Because I interacted with her later, and she was just totally cool. It was just like, just I don't know, just really shitty
but
behavior.
It is like a parable, because it's like it doesn't, I mean, you, the people that get fucked over, I mean, I guess it happens on the freeway every day. It's like, I don't know, it's just like you see that like weird look on people's faces when they do shitty things in traffic, and they kind of like, you just, you project all this information onto them.
Oh my God, Kevin was saying the same thing.
About galaxies. but like the biggest nightmare of all is that when the person's like not even mad, you kind of want people to be malicious more than you want what so often seems to be the reality, which is that they're not thinking about other people. They're just like these mannequins that are like driving a car, and they just like, I have something to do, and they'd be so shocked if you, and then other people who are like having a bad day, like they intersect with this behavior, and then they're fucking, now that person's mad, And they go, like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, what the fuck? Like you just pulled out into, like, I saw you. You're the look on your face. You're like a fucking turtle behind a wheel. Like, you're just looking for a fly. But you're in a world full of people with 3-ton automobiles. There are pregnant people, babies, giraffes everywhere. I went too far, but then those people, like, if you've ever actually, like, gotten mad enough to honk and then make eye contact with them and flip them off, like, kind of vent your outrage at their carelessness, they more often than not, they're like, they have this look on their face that's like c'est moi. They're just kind of like, oh, you, oh, me, my day today. Someone gets mad at me. What did I do?
Well, or there was a mistake.
It's always a mistake. Right, they didn't mean to. No, I mean, except for maybe like a weird Quentin Tarantino character. Nobody's like going out there. I'm gonna go ram into people or almost cause car accidents. But but they also like they're not angry at people, whatever. What I'm saying is, I think that's more terrifying, because why weren't you thinking about other people? I can understand not seeing like that the light turned green or something. I don't know. You get lost in thought and people behind you honk, and that's irritating. We've all been there. We've all been behind that person. We've all been that person.
I bought a student driver magnet.
But I'm talking about not looking, not driving. I've officially become middle-aged. Listen to my podcast. I will bitch about young people driving.
Can I add a correction? I listened to the last week's episode, which is really fun. In the episode, you were talking about names, and you asked Dan what baby names I wanted. Dan named two names that he suggested that I hate. Connor and
Cormac.
Those are two names that Dan literally was like, what about Cormac? What about Connor? I was like, eh.
I don't remember that.
Somebody,
I'm very sorry.
Twisted around in his head.
But you like Paloma.
I do like Paloma. Yeah.
Maxwell?
Nope.
Is your name Maxwell?
No, it was from the podcast.
Oh.
From your former D&D character or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I do like the name Max.
My D&D character, Maxwell Artfall. Or was that my Shadowrun character? I can't remember.
What was Night Moves?
Nightblade. Night Moves. That's what Dan said to the ladies when he was...
Oh, one more thing, and then we'll bring Spencer up. You were telling me a story from camp, and then you started crying while you were telling the story, and I was telling a story at the Memorial Day barbecue where I could not, and I don't think it was that drunk. I'm sure there's some chemical involved. I'm sure I had enough liquor in me that maybe if I was dead sober, this wouldn't happen. But I could not tell this story without crying. I was trying. I was talking to two guys, Chris McKenna and Tom Kaufman, I think. And I was like very incentivized to not fucking like be crying while I was telling this dumb story. And I couldn't get through the story. And then that was happening to you at dinner tonight. Or actually, well, it was happening because you were telling about how it happened to you at camp. What was the story that you... Oh, it was about the swings in Montreal.
In Montreal, there's this artist that put up these swings in the middle of like a central area. And they're lit at the bottom. And when you swing on them, they play music. And when the artist installed this piece, he was just thinking it would be this beautiful thing from far away. You see lights swinging back and forth, kind of like the light posts outside of LACMA. I wonder if I'll cry again. We'll
see. That's what I want to.
So there are all these swings, and there are like 50 different swings. What he didn't anticipate was that people would swing. People on the swings like started interacting with strangers and started working together to like make music on the swings, because they all make different songs. So they would say like, no, you go this way, you go that way. And there was a picture of like a man and his daughters, and he's like holding the swings and they're all moving together. And this woman was explaining this as part of her presentation, and I was just weeping, and then I cried at dinner, and I guess I'm all out. That's true. So it was just very, like, it crept up on me how moved I was by that idea.
Are those things like sponges? Can you squeeze them? Do you have, like, three times to tell that story? When we were on the road, that guy told me the story about his fiance. And I found that when I was telling the story, I couldn't do it without crying backstage. And so that night on the road, I can't remember what city we were in, but I tried it. And again, I think I cried on stage, right? Because it was like,
yeah.
But then at the Memorial Day barbecue, I started recounting how we went to NASCAR. And because we got invited there. It was the year I got fired. It was right before we got fired. The head of Sony is like a NASCAR enthusiast. Or they sponsor a car. Sony sponsors a car, maybe. And we went to this NASCAR thing in Tacoma.
The subway thing, right?
Whatever. And this woman that came to meet us, who was like the head of Sony's assistant, she sounded like
Gloria Steinem,
Jeanette from the Ghostbusters secretary, Annie Potts character, like, was it Janine,
which is how I imagine Gloria Steinem.
She had that. She was like that. Archetypically, like Jersey, and she was like 3.5 feet tall, and she had like, I remember I was having horn rimmed glasses with chains, and like was very very attired in a very urban chic way, but greeted us at the arena and was like you are gonna love NASCAR, it's a delight. The drivers are so amazing, it's a great experience, people just love it, and it was such a weird, it was not a NASCAR personality, but Aaron and I kept like,
she was very like intellectual too, like she was very smart and
we
thoughtful.
We kept falling back and going like, is she forced to do this? Because she shouldn't be forced to do this. Like,
because
if you
haven't been to NASCAR, it's all very white, it's all very Christian, like a God is a big part of all of it, like there's constant praying, and it doesn't seem like a place where a nice Jewish woman would want to hang out.
What's her backstory? She's very nice, she shows us where the sandwiches are, she introduces us to the driver of the car. Yeah, everything is very heartland, you know, waspy.
Is it now, in California here?
So
the Pomona Speedway, probably, right?
Fontana.
So at a certain point, I'm going to broach it. I'm going to go, so whatever her name was, how does, and I, in that space, she goes, how does a New Jersey Jewish girl end up being a blah blah blah? Like she like summed up the whole thing. So it took the whole burden of it off of her. We're like yeah. What is this action figure doing in this playset? And she goes, well, you know, and she starts to she recounts the story. It has a real answer, and the answer is that when she was a kid, her dad.
Cry.
Her dad was really into cars, and she would sit with him and fix cars with him, and then he died, and then she explained that. It was fucking amazing. And I can't say it without crying, because
stories like that aren't sponges that you can that you can wring out, like you can say three times and all the tears are gone. There's certain stories that you might get better at telling and eliminate the parts that are potent.
Yeah, like I could maybe steer around that with my jet ski, like set waypoints, Grand Theft Auto waypoints that I know will avoid combat with my emotions. But it's weirder to me that there's like a point in there where it's an uncontrollable emotional response to something that's, it's not random because there's an emotional component to that story. A father died and all this stuff, but something is happening because Aaron said, someone said, told me you could, you're telling this story, you couldn't stop crying, and I thought we agreed that story was funny. Like it was just kind of a funny thing.
That makes me sound like the worst.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
In the world.
I don't know. No, we both agreed it was touching, but I'm saying that you were surprised because it wasn't like we were bawling that day.
Yeah, at the time it was like kind of a, not laughing at her in any way, but it laughing at a like, oh, this is such a seemingly like really touching, like obvious, like on the nose, like create like story.
That's for me, like father and son, mother daughter stories in movies, like those always get me. Like Frozen's a good movie. It's not a great Disney movie. Like I'm a sucker for Disney films. Like I Frozen, it's not great. But like still, like there's songs when there's moments in it where like sisters or like family stuff, I'll just start crying. I'm a pushover for that kind of shit.
You gotta let it go, Jeff.
Let it go.
I'm scared to watch
young male friendships. get me, Sandlot and Stand By Me, like little boys that are friends. Like yeah. I just want to watch those. I just want to watch them.
I'm gonna get you a white van for Christmas. I want you to live your.
Can you get me a big baseball mitt decal for the side, with free beneath it? I don't know. I want to attract the right kind of boys. The ones that like baseball.
There are certain scenes in certain movies that are absolutely meaningless to other people. If I describe a certain scene, I will start crying, and I've done it a million times. I cannot, like, there's certain things that affect you, and I'm a crier. I think we've discussed this.
I mean, you could cry, you could fake cry on cue. People couldn't tell the difference, so.
I can't fake cry on cue. I can't just like produce a tear without like actually like going through something, but I can cry on camera.
Right.
It's embarrassing because one time I did a pilot. I did a pilot and it was two doctors and I cried on scene and the director walked up and goes, "Okay, Jeff, that's a little bit much." It's like, all right. I didn't have to cry in that scene, did I? Like, it didn't say any cries. I just started crying in the scene.
That
I thought,
little boy doesn't retrain his brain. He'll be dyslexic until sixth grade.
No, maybe. It was like, what time is it again? It was like, it was a meaningless scene. I just thought I'd really get an Emmy in that pilot that never aired.
When I was in the fifth grade, I was in a Christmas play, and at a certain point, the chorus came out with these big plastic lollipops, and we're supposed to be dancing with the lollipops. And in rehearsal, the director had said, like pretend like you really want to lick the lollipop. And I misunderstood. So in the play, when everyone came out and everyone's dancing with the lollipops and going, like, for the podcast listeners, just, like, gently, like, away, air licking the lollipop, I was licking and, like, pretending to eat the lollipop. And I forgot to dance, was just standing there like I was eating. And to get notes after a one-time production of a show.
They're just worried you're going out into the world. They're not even worried about next week's show.
The show is closed. Here's personality notes.
Aaron McGathy, the world is full of scissors, so we need to talk to you about your behavior on stage tonight. I can't watch that Michael Keaton's My Life. Fucking when the dad starts shaving him. Look it up.
When the dad starts shaving him.
Yeah. Michael Keaton shaving in My Life plays a terminally ill man who's Nicole Kidman is pregnant, and he's making tapes that his kid can watch. This doesn't affect me at all. I can roll my eyes describing this. Michael Keaton's making tapes because he's going to die so that his kid can watch Michael Keaton after he's dead. Don't flatter yourself, dad. But Michael Keaton's dad is like the, I don't know, is that something pheromonal must come off the screen or something, his relationship with his dad. It's just a lack of a relationship. And then he's not even telling his family he has cancer for a while. And then there's a point where Michael Keaton's too sick to get out of bed and his dad is shaving him with a straight razor. It's fucked up. His dad shaves him. Oh. It's fucked up. I also once cried at the end of Doc Hollywood, so you go. You figure it out. That was just drunk. That was just fucking drunk.
I went on a date with a girl. What year did Pretty Woman come out? Anybody?
90.
90? I went on a date with this girl to Pretty Woman, and I cried. And she cried too, but like I was crying harder.
Because you feel like a little hooker. I haven't seen the movie.
You go back into
I had a no-kissing rule, but I found out that you have to break that rule sometime.
Oh,
Billy Elliot.
Remember, you haven't seen
the film Billy Elliot?
I also haven't seen Billy Elliot.
I saw that
with a friend. Like, it wasn't the girl I was dating. Like, it was a friend of mine. And we went to the Los Feliz 3, a little tiny theater, and we saw it. And I was sitting there, and I'm watching it. And it's about a little kid who wants to dance, and his family's poor, like working class English family. And the family, the mother dies, father sacrifices everything to get this kid through dance school, and at the end he comes on stage and he does Swan Lake, and it's like, and when he jumps in the air, when he jumps, spoilers everybody if you haven't seen Billy on 30 years ago, he comes out and he's an adult, and what they don't do in that movie is make a big thing about him possibly being gay. They don't make a big thing about, well, you're a gay son. They don't do that. They're like, hey, you want to dance and I'm a coal miner or whatever he's mining, I can't afford your lifestyle, I can't send you to classes, I can't do that. So they do that, and that's father son shit. That's amazing. And then at the end, when now he's an adult, and they cut to all of a sudden, he's this huge, fit, sexy, older, or not older, he's probably 18, 19, and he's like the swan in Swan Lake, and he comes out and does his leap, and I may cry when I say this, but I've told it too many times, Dan. And they cut to the father, and he goes, and he sees his son leap in the air, and he's like overwhelmed by it. And that, to me, I cried so fucking hard in that theater. We got in the car, I live at the time, like six blocks away from that theater, I had to pull over because I was driving and I couldn't.
You're watching in your car?
No. I cried in the theater.
Oh, and you're still crying.
I was embarrassed. I mean, I wasn't embarrassed about crying. I'm not embarrassed, but I was afraid of affecting other people's movie going experience because I was sobbing. And so I was trying to muffle, like, I broke down. And then we made it to the car. And I got my shit together. Or no, we were the last people to leave the theater. And we got in the car, and I drove home and had to pull over because I couldn't see the road because I was crying so hard. And I had to stop three blocks away, and I was still just completely overcome by that.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Get a life, this guy. You know what fucked me up?
Yeah, it's no Doc Hollywood.
I got all fucked up by the Lego movie.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see me? Did you know I was crying next to you?
I did not know you were crying. Usually I'm always
watching
for tears.
That was a hard one because it was right on the fucking bubble of what's allowed to make you cry versus what's like just forcing it and like hoping you cry, which I don't want to give you a fucking satisfaction. It's a goddamn Lego movie. It's literally about corporate plastic. And I was like, I know you want me to cry. It's a fine written movie. You did a good job.
Has anyone here
seen
it?
But it's not cry.
For me, it's musical crescendos. When a simple story beat happens and the music swells, I'm fucking, I'm game over, baby.
I think it had a lot to do with Will Ferrell. I think he's a really good, Stranger Than Fiction. Like, he's, if he wants to, he can. I think that's why he's so funny. I think he's a really facile.
Did you cry during Meet the Robinsons? Did anyone, underrated movie? Anyone like Meet the Robinsons?
I never saw it.
Wait, what was Meet the Robinsons? What is
Yeah, that's good. Fox and the Hound.
Are good. Yeah.
Fox and the Hound is my ultimate.
Fox sounds good. Disney stuff.
And there are two. They're still little boys,
wait, what's
but they're
Meet
animals.
The Robinsons. What is that? I don't know. What's Meet the Robinsons?
Meet the Robinsons is about the young orphan who's an inventor. And he finds a family.
I haven't seen that.
I was watching the original Sabrina with Audrey Hepburn. It starts off, and who's it? Is it William Holden and Bogart? Who's in it? Nobody knows her. But it starts off like these rich people partying, and they pan out outside the party, and they go up this tree, and there's this... the chauffeur's daughter from this rich family, this rich New York family, she's just in the tree watching these sexy rich people party.
Fuck that movie.
And they go up the tree and they just cut to Audrey Hepburn's face. And I was watching it at home alone, and I just hit pause and broke down crying.
Really? It's such a beautiful story, but Audrey Hepburn is too beautiful in that movie. Like, I think that the impact of that story is so lost on.
Well, look, I'm not I'm not defending the film or the plot or anything. I'm just saying that when they cut up there and you see her looking at that, and it was that moment, like, so well directed of somebody like being on the outside of something, and you cut to her eyes and she's so beautiful and she's like so like unique. It's one of those moments where I had to hit pause and just I just came apart. I do that a lot, so that's not really saying a whole lot.
Are you saying you were just crying at her beauty?
No, not her physical beauty. There was just that moment.
How are you not weeping right now? I'm sitting.
No, there's just moments like Katherine Hepburn. What's the fucking movie? Holiday or some shit? Was it her
Roman
and?
Holiday?
No, not Roman Holiday. There's one. It's her and. What's the one with Cary Grant? Is it Cary Grant? Fuck, now I can't think of who it is.
It's called Fart Noodles.
He's kind of like a socialist anarchist. He should marry the rich heiress, but he wants to go away and be like do his own thing and not become a capitalist. Huh? At any point, there's Catherine Hepburn. Catherine Hepburn turns the. She's like the not sexy sister. Although Catherine Hepburn's like gorgeous, and she wants the guy, and the guy leaves, and the door opens, and she sees him, and she turns to the camera, and Catherine Hepburn has the ability to always look like she's about to like cry or say something amazing, and she just turns to camera. It's one of those moments where somebody tweet me or put it on some sort of forum, tell me all the details about that. There's a moment where cinema, like the director, the actors, the script, all comes together, and somebody just turning the camera and the way it's lit and the way it's shot, that can just hit you like a fucking lightning bolt, and like that's. Like, that's my favorite stuff in the world. And the times, like,
that's what happened in Doc Hollywood. You gotta watch it.
Oh. You know who I always call Doc Hollywood? Yeah.
Glory gets me too.
Glory had a shelf life for getting me. I think Glory got me in high school, yeah. And then I started to go like, "Fuck, these poor people are all just dying for rich people." I don't even. I'm just angry watching it. But Monuments Men, I started crying because Hitler lost all his paintings. I've been wanting to say that for 15 minutes. I thought that was that funny. But I'm also distracted. Is this a friend of yours? This young lady? Did she leave because the show was terrible, or did she?
No, I'm so much more focused. And guys,
I feel bad about where she's sitting.
I don't think it's because your feet were in her face.
Oh, okay.
I'm sitting at a certain angle, and I want to keep the volume at the same place so the person I'm talking about doesn't know that it's happening. But there's a fellow right over. Oh shit! He woke up. This guy over here. Are you okay? What's your name, man? What's your name? What's your name? What's your name?
Colin.
You're right, man.
I'm sleeping.
Because like I've been watching you struggle with this the whole show, man. Like you've been head in hands. Are you high? Are you a little tired? Or what's going on over here? A little bit of both.
Colin, I could be wrong, but have you ever fallen asleep at a UCB show? I feel like I've seen you sleep before.
I thought you were being defensive. I'm like, well,
no,
Aaron,
no,
we're not
no,
trained
I,
improvisers.
When I saw him, I was like, that guy fell asleep at my show at UCB. Like,
oh, but Colin, you've been over there. You're good, right? Oh, see, a guy just brought you a water. That's great.
Guy, Dustin Marshall.
That guy is podcast producer Dustin Marshall.
Colin, I'm just glad you're going to make it, man. Where'd you fly in from? Or where'd you travel from?
I drove back from Zion.
From Zion? Nice. Where's Zion?
It's in Utah.
In Utah. Oh,
you can't know where Zion is. The robots will find it. it's a little Matrix comedy, man. Classic.
That's what we do here at Harmontown. We sneak into Matrix comedy once in a while. Are you good, though, man? Okay, good. I thought you might have, you know, some serious shit going down over there.
He's just a little sleepy. What a nightmare to be.
No,
he was stirred from your sleep.
He wasn't just sleepy. He was wringing his face, and he was, like, rubbing his head. And it was like,
I mean, that's what I do when I'm going, like, God, please don't fall asleep. I know this show is just three people talking about movies they liked. But it's so much like being in a car just going down the highway from Zion. I don't know what's real anymore.
What was going down in Zion, Colin?
I was doing some canyoneering.
You do some canyoneering? Okay, the shit got fucking more interesting just now. What does it take to canyoneer? I'm not familiar with the canyoneering lifestyle.
Yeah,
get up. Go sit at Spencer's table, Colin. Get on a microphone.
No, come up.
No, just sit down. Sit down over there so you can fall asleep, possibly.
Okay.
Colin, are you a canyoneer by trade?
Not by trade, no.
What would he sell?
I don't know. I don't know what a canyoneer is.
He
might sell rope or arrowheads. I don't know what he does.
Well, if you sold
Colin,
arrowheads.
Colin, we need you. We need four canyons today. Just make a list.
These arrowheads are going out the door like hotcakes. We need more canyoneering to happen. The overhead's so tremendous.
Tell me about walk me through as an outsider.
So you know mountaineering, like climbing a mountain. This is canyoneering, so you go down.
So you descend into
you
canyons.
Descend down into.
But then you gotta come back up, right?
It's a joke. Why did you canyoneer? Because it isn't there.
We canyoneer.
He said, you know the old saying.
Mountain climbing.
No, you have to climb up.
Yeah.
And then you descend down into a canyon through.
How do you know when you're finished?
So for canyoneering, it's the opposite. You descend down, then the hard work lay ahead, where you have to climb the fuck out.
You don't have to climb out because you get to the bottom.
Isn't your car up there? you just live down there for the rest of your life?
Okay, sometimes you can go from your car, hike up, and then come back down to your car. Or you set up a shuttle. So when you get to the bottom...
Canyoneering has shuttles, Colin.
Someone will pick you up.
Well, sometimes it's a long walk back to your car, so...
Right.
What is your favorite part of canyoneering?
Clearly not the walk back to your car.
Do you like going down more, or going back up?
The rappelling through.
So you have to rappel. So you're going down sheer cliffs and harnesses.
We had to wear wetsuits.
What?
Yeah,
because it gets wet.
We had to swim because we had to swim in these canyons.
Jesus,
and
you're like a Navy SEAL. Hey, let me ask it. So when you're rappelling, you're in the movies. Like the people, are you driving metal into rock?
No. Okay, so that's like rock climbing. They're setting down.
Oh, so you could tie something up at the top because
they're climbing up.
How do you anchor yourself into the top?
Like, we rappelled off some rocks.
Just a pile of rocks.
So you just tie off on a big rock and hope that rock is...
And hope that Looney Tunes rules don't apply.
Sometimes you can use a nice big tree, but I set an anchor that was just a pile of rocks.
So you go down into a canyon.
Yeah.
Ostensibly, your shit is up top, right?
You park your car... I feel like he's annoyed with these questions. the trailhead. You hike to the drop-in point,
right,
following some very vague directions. Sometimes it's very difficult to find it.
Right.
You get lost.
And then you
climb down into the canyon.
And once you're down there, how do you get the... Your rope is just tied up there? It just stays there? Is there a way to get it back off? Or do you do like an Indiana Jones thing with the whip where it just comes off?
Okay, so you throw one end of the rope down.
Right.
And then you block it off so it can't go any further.
Mm-hmm.
You rappel down, and then you throw... You have to have a rope that's twice as long as the rappel.
Right.
So you can throw the other end down, and then when you all get down, you can pull that other end.
I would do it wrong because I didn't even get that.
So,
one of your friends has to not be a canyoneer. It has to be up at the car getting your rope back.
No.
Oh, when you're done, you get back up there and you fucking pull it back up.
That's where the car is. The car's by the tree. Basically.
So when you get down to the canyon, do you guys have a little party down there? Do you guys set up camp and fucking make marshmallows and shit?
Well, it depends.
Sometimes
there's a canyons that are long enough to facilitate like a 3-day trek through it.
What's a good canyon and what's a bad canyon? Like when you're like obviously.
He's not gonna talk shit about a canyon. He's a canyoneer.
Obviously, like
he's making all the Arrowhead money.
Obviously, some trips are better than others. Like what makes like that was deep or like that was.
That was cavernous, man. Straight up cavernous.
That was not convex at all.
It definitely depends. It depends on what you're there for. See, I like.
What are you there for?
I like the challenges of like some down climbing and some of the problem solving that comes with setting anchors and.
What's bad canyoneering form? Like, are there any like faux pas?
Like, do you ever be going down down into a canyon? You see someone else going down the canyon. Oh, that guy's doing it wrong.
Well, yeah, there was a story. This group, well, it wasn't really a group. It was two people. It was this gentleman and his priest.
That's already the wrong way to canyoneer.
Okay, that seems pessimistic.
No, but yeah.
I got a bad feeling about this.
They
Father, will you join me?
he wanted to be baptized in this canyon or whatever. So,
so
his poor priest is like, okay.
So I don't know what they were thinking, but they went into the canyon with flip flops, tank tops, like some shorts, and a backpack full of camera supplies. No water, no food, no helmets, and no rope or descending.
No rope?
They somehow managed to get their way down this canyon. Yeah, yeah. They somehow managed to get down this canyon. And they got stuck on the opposite side of this pool of freezing water. And they couldn't get across.
Who told you that story?
The group I went with actually was in that canyon. They were doing the canyon with all of their gear and whatnot.
But were
and they
his
came
sins
across
washed away?
These two people.
That's and so nuts.
I was just I not to digress too much, but somebody was telling me that you watch the show. It's a reality show called like I Should Have Died or I Survived or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard of it. I have.
I shouldn't be
I
alive.
Shouldn't be alive. Yeah, I've heard of it.
I should have died was too negative. They workshopped it. I should have died.
I don't want to live.
There was a somebody was telling me about the show, and they're like, yeah, and they're telling me about this couple that was like, they should have died because they kind of went off into the wilderness unprepared. But the thing that was amazing to me is that at a certain point in their story, they come across, like when things are really dire already, they come across a corpse. An undiscovered corpse of a guy that had more equipment than they set out with. A fucking Chester Copperpot to their Goonies. And it was like a fucking emaciated, skeletal fucking dude by a river that was like, yep, I found water. Not enough. And they the way they survived, this is so fucking sad. I don't know.
Are you going to cry again?
No, because it's sad about just reality. It's a sad joke that God plays on all of us. Like, the way they survived is that the guy, this corpse, had a lighter in his equipment, and the guy just started setting forest fires until finally they caused enough of a problem in terms of climate, in terms of global economics.
Wait,
that
so,
vehicle
so
showed
up. The guy got lost.
They got lost.
Found a corpse.
Yeah.
The corpse had a lighter.
The corpse had a lighter, and it
and
worked.
And then he just started lighting forest fires.
Yeah.
Hey, Colin, would you?
What part of that story do you?
He's just incredulous. Dan, how about this? Let's bring Spencer. Colin, would you mind coming up on stage and playing D&D with us?
Yeah, yeah. Would you?
You know,
we have a real canyoneer.
Let's bring Spencer out.
You'll be great at, I assume, because. It's like simulated wilderness.
What's happening, you guys?
Hey.
Spencer. Sorry it took so long to get you out here, man. We met a sleepy canyoneer.
Oh, I know. I saw. Just real quick. Large musical movie swells make me cry too, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Musical swells.
But yeah, baby. Yeah. Well, just that's getting that out of the way. I don't think you said this, but I know Colin. I'm friends with him.
For real?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
See, wait. I was just going to say, I bet you really like Colin because you're a coyote. I'm being glib, but you're into life hacking and wilderness, kind of. Not that you're a big camping guy, but.
Yeah, we definitely trade coyote notes, sure.
Spencer, there was a coyote, several coyotes up at the camp.
Yeah.
Spencer has been telling me. Spencer drives me to work in the morning. He's been telling me that since that podcast, I don't know if he connected the dots, but since that podcast, you've told me that you've been seeing more and more coyotes gathering around your apartment. Like, you didn't put it that way, but I was like, I think they heard the podcast.
Yeah.
Throw down.
I wouldn't put that way because it's not factually accurate. Like, when I dropped Dan off at his house, I was driving home and just like, you know, a couple near his house, I saw a coyote there.
All right, nearby.
And then I see him all the time at Griffith Park because I drive by in the mornings.
It's not near your place at all. Coyotes are finding you, though.
Yeah, we're hanging out and stuff.
Coyotes are marauding through my neighborhood in Los Feliz. And my neighbor, Paul Rust, his cat got eaten not so long ago.
Yeah, it's sad. I see those signs.
And he said when he walks his dog,
he goes out, and if it's 2 a.m., and he'll open the door, and the sound of the leash jingling is the dinner bell for coyotes. Oh. They know the sound of doors opening and leashes. And so there'd be a big-ass pack, and you wake up in my neighborhood to the sound of an animal being absolutely murdered and screaming, and then people coming out and throwing wine bottles and like whatever's at hand and throwing
Wait,
shit at coyotes.
Wait, this is your apartment?
Yeah.
What, you live in a fucking what?
No. Coyotes come down by the dozen. Not the dozen. I'll say 400. We are the 400. Oh.
Jeff lives 50 yards from us.
You'll see. Yeah, no. You'll see like one coyote, three more, five more.
What?
And they come down in packs, and they go down.
Come down from where?
Come down from Griffith Park. They cross Los Feliz Boulevard. You can see them sometimes crossing like in little caravans.
And they come because of the dinner bell?
They come down to eat cats, and they come down to eat dogs.
My cat goes outside.
Yeah. A dog across the street the house, maybe like about a month and a half ago, I heard, I mean, I can't do an impression. Aaron, do an impression of a dog getting eaten.
A dog being eaten.
Yes.
What kind of dog?
A small dog, high-pitched terror.
Okay.
Oh, those are the coyotes.
All right, now.
I just came.
Imagine that, but someone's jerking off to that right now. Imagine that, but 10 times worse and louder. And then
okay.
People were. I said imagine it. But like, no, it's bloody murder out there, and the coyotes are getting real good at it.
Do you think they could get into my backyard? And don't be a doomsayer. Be a supportive, if enabling,
yes.
friend.
I will say that absolutely, yeah. They can get into your backyard.
But there's a lot of bushes around it.
No, they get in.
Our backyard is surrounded by
the bush in our
backyard. You know, like not from your front yard. They'd come in through the back. There's just jump down that wall thing.
They would jump all that distance.
Yeah, yeah,
7-foot wall.
I mean, they
probably can't get back up easily. But yeah.
Well, that would serve them right. I'd like to see that coyote. It'd be worth him eating my cat, just to have him trapped in my backyard.
Dan and I had a raccoon problem, and we kept on catching the neighbors.
Be right back. I got a friend you want to meet.
No, I don't think your backyard's surrounded by other houses that have front gates and stuff too, so it'd be difficult for them to get out. I just see them cruising, like patrolling from door to door, and they go in and out.
They do, yeah. They go check out like back gates and stuff.
Yeah.
They were, one came tooling down fucking. I thought he was just like a drunk coyote because he was just coming down. Avocado? What's it? Little Dom's? We were eating outside of Little Dom's. And he's just down the middle of the road like fucking an REM video. Just like, everybody hurts. Everybody hurts.
Okay.
It's
the end of the world.
But we had Harvey and he was a puppy and it was like he was like just... it's crazy.
There's a family of skunks once in a while that will just decide to take up shop in front of my front door. And they're adorable because there's mom and pop and a couple kids. And they'll just cruise up and they just sit on my front door. And there's a Mexican standoff that happens. Like, they're not going anywhere. I'm not approaching them. It'll be midnight. And it's just adorable little polecat sitting there.
Yeah.
And they just look at you. And then the dad or the mom, I don't know which is which.
Polecat?
Skunks, yeah.
Is that skunk?
Is that racist?
You made it racist.
It's got to be offensive to somebody.
Aren't skunks polecats?
Yep.
Yeah. Same thing.
Also, Mexican standoff. Mm.
No, so,
in Los Feliz?
Okay. It's a gentrified standoff.
It's part Armenian, part gay standoff. Given way to a nice place with wine bars.
Do skunks make noises?
No.
I've never heard them make a noise. If you hear something, it's the sound of them spraying you. I always stomp my foot like on the pavement.
I don't fuck with skunks. Because one time
I don't fuck with them. I just make a nuisance of myself and hope that they...
Yeah, spray you with a skunk scent?
No, I want to scare
a skunk. I don't know what happened. When I lived on Talmadge, that shitty apartment, Talmadge and Franklin, a skunk, I don't know what happened, but the skunk must have exploded underneath my door jamb because I for a month, I couldn't even be in my apartment because your eyes would just water. Like when it's in close quarters like that, it's like a neurotoxin. It's insane.
Yeah, that stuff's crazy. Sorry, yeah. Colin. Sorry about this.
All right, Spencer, we have...
He's exploring a new canyon tonight.
All right, but real quick.
A kind of valley of entertainment. a dangerous rocky ravine that knows no bottom.
Hope you doubled your rope.
Colin, before we have you play possibly Kumail's character in this, anything that makes you cry? Is there a trigger for you that gets you teary?
Flatland.
Mountains.
Yeah. Hates them.
Like in film or music, or you see a nice sunset, or a certain kind of thought crosses your mind.
Nothing really actually.
Are you a
comes
crier?
To mind.
You're not a crier.
Sometimes when it strikes me, I can't. I can't think of a.
There's time. Not a genre that makes you cry.
You're not much of a crier.
Not
though.
Really.
I mean, it's not like you're rock solid, but you're not. You're not like super
sometimes
emotional.
Sometimes there's like a there's a moving moment in a movie, but
that'll get you.
That'll get me, but I can't really think of any.
How old are you, Colin?
I'm 25.
25.
I Demorge was so amazing playing Moraine Sedana. I'm just gonna pick up where he left off. I'm going to do it his style for now on.
Quiet. All right, Spencer, are you good to go?
Yeah.
Sorry to make us wait so long.
Hey, it's cool. I'm not feeling great.
Let's play.
That's the perfect music cue.
Yeah. That's the sound of my stomach. This is
wait,
the soundtrack.
Can you DM your stomach problems right now for us before you get into that?
Gurgling in the soft darkness of the sack, you feel that not all is where it should be, but soon it would get there. I don't know what that means. That sounded right? I don't know. What up? Should I keep stomaching?
D&D.
Yeah! When we last met, our heroes had just joined forces with the secret order of the Seekers of Paradise. Charles Hoffman, their gnomish leader, shared with the heroes a magical tablet, which Quark activated, causing a dangerous and deadly rift to open, sucking our heroes through to unknown lands. After licking their wounds, Sharpie and the gang found themselves in a new land, the Isle of Paradise, where they encountered Yomiji, the angel guardian of the isle, who demanded a joke which Quark gladly supplied. Yomiji relented, accepting the gang's worthiness and showing them to the plants of paradise. The gang found the fabled Tarragon of Virtue and used it to force Admiral Darkstar's spirit out of Christaberg, initiating an epic ghost battle. And after several blows, the ghost pulled a desperate maneuver, possessing Yomiji and taking control of his body. Then Sharpie declared a retreat. But would they truly be able to escape Darkstar's wrath? Or would they end up charred bits on the end of Yomiji's flaming shovel? Find out on an all-new Harmontown.
All right, so I think we all agreed we were running at the end. We cliffhanged on running.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so you guys have all that Tarragon of Virtue. You got several clumps. You're on the floating Isle of Paradise, floating high above the land, and it's an island. So where are you running to?
I have a question for Sharpie. What is this Tarragon of Virtue capable of?
What, me?
Yeah.
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Well, you can use it to do what we did, which is get our friend uncursed. I mean, it's
But can't we go back and attack Yomiji with it?
We can try, but I tried to feed him some, and it was just he's really big and scary. So, we're running while we're talking.
I
have my armulet of spring, and we're in a fucking goddamn like I've been waiting for months game time for us to be in a place with growth. I forgot I had it. I could entangle his ass.
All right. Should I go back and kind of lure him along after? Is he chasing us right now, Spencer?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so fucking, all right. I look around and see if there's any sort of like wooded areas or like bucolic kind of things.
What's bucolic mean?
Verdant.
Sure. Okay. The whole isle is very verdant, but it's not super vegetated. It's kind of sparse. Like, even if you tried to hide in the one copse of trees on the island, I'd see you. or enemies, you know.
Sharpie, is that enough growth for you?
My armulet of spraying, which has the kind of entangle thing to it.
Yeah.
Like, that is how reliant on verdantry is that?
Well, the armulet's not. It has it has vines as part of it, and it shoots off those vines to entangle.
Oh, you're shitting me. I could use that on a space shuttle?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I always thought it was like entangle.
Yeah, well, Mulrain has the entangle spell, so she could do that, but yours is part of your artifact. So.
Jesus Christ, I was like Boba Fett the whole time. I could just...
Yeah. Are you saying we should turn and fight? I look around and see if there's any canyons nearby.
No, it's like it's an isle floated in air.
All right.
It's like a magical island, like a desert island with one palm tree kind of thing, but with more than that.
All right, I say
but
we...
small,
wait,
you know, not
so
giant.
So we have nowhere to run to?
No, it's an island. It's in the air.
Let's turn and fight.
Well, Rhode Island's an island. there's lots of places to run if you go there. You could go to New York. You could go to Pennsylvania.
Rhode Island's not an island, though, is
it? All right, well, maybe that's why.
What if we try to light him on fire? Burn him down?
Just light him on fire? The guy?
Right, isn't he like a
he's
monster?
A blazing angel.
Oh, he's already
angel.
On fire.
He loves being on fire.
He's got a flaming
shovel. He woke up on fire and he said, yay.
I think our only chance is using this Tarragon of Virtue to release that.
Yeah, he tried to use Mage Hand to get some in his mouth and he blocked it. It's just right. Maybe it was just
why,
a bad
why are
roll.
We trying to feed it to him, though?
To get the, that's another point. Well, because every time we do that, we've done it twice now, and the spirit comes out of him and it goes to someone else. Now it's in somebody that I'm not going to say we're... Well, if we kill him, it's just going to come out of him, too. I mean, this is just... This is like net neutrality. This it's like it makes you want to give up. You know, people from Comcast are working for the FCC. Everyone that used to work for the FCC is working for Comcast.
Who got us up... How did we get up to the Isle of Paradise again?
You Charles activated Hoffman? A magical tablet that sucked you through and damaged you. It created this portal to the island. That portal still exists.
Let's go back to that portal.
Oh, shit, yeah. If we're going to run, let's run correctly.
Yeah. And then have him chase us through?
Then he'd just be in a gnome village. He could fight the smoke monster from the cigarette store. Remember that guy?
So we don't care about the gnomes. Let's go
I mean, we
the
don't,
portal.
I mean, we've never been good people.
But we did our job. We got Krista Berg healed. Let's get the fuck out of here. Right?
Yeah.
Right. Sounds good to me.
Head for the portal.
All right, we run to the portal.
You run towards the portal, and it glows softly. It's covered in dazzling polygonal shapes that kind of slough off of it like some sort of spray or water. It's magical. It looks painful, though. Like, you recall when you went through it, it hurt pretty bad. Your skin was rent from your bodies in some places. You remember that as you run towards the portal and Yomiji chases you.
Should we try to get him to go first?
yeah, at the last second, let's all just jump out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I don't mind stopping, spreading out, and kind of like, you know, attacking him from multiple directions.
Yeah, I said we put up a fight with this guy.
Let's fucking do it.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. This is just table talk. This isn't... I'm not taking a turn having this conversation, but I guess I should because this is what our characters are saying. I could talk about this all day, but instead I'm just going to talk about it. If we kill him, it's the same effect as putting tarragon in his mouth, which seems to be an endless... There's no fucking end in sight to this. This Darkstar ghost comes out of him,
right,
and it goes into someone else. It's like Vietnam. This is our Vietnam.
Yeah, but we haven't killed him. Maybe it just.
But we killed some dudes.
Dies.
We killed. Didn't we kill somebody and then the ghost came out of him?
You stuffed tarragon into Charles Hoffman's mouth.
Oh, okay, so we did that with Kumail, we did that with Charles Hoffman, and okay, so we have never actually killed an entity that had this thing.
Maybe
in it.
I know I just said that I was committing to playing like Demurge, but what if I with my supplies built
here we go.
Don't fall off the wagon just yet, sweetie.
I'm not falling off the wagon.
I was just making a joke.
Oh, it felt real. Oh, no, that's it. But what if because we he jumps into like the nearest, is he jumping into the nearest vessel or like the most?
I don't think so. I think it's more random.
It's random. Like is he how? So he's able to travel to like something far away. Like if we made like a decoy vessel that we could burn, like if I was to build like an ogre with a crown and be like, it's the king of all the ogres, and have him there and feed him the tarot, I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna jump into this king, and we'd be like, no, it's made out of yarn, like, and then we would set it on fire. Like, it does, is he able? He's able to just travel. He travels. I mean, yeah. Sharpie, I think maybe he's just around forever.
Well, I didn't make him, and also I don't think he can go into sticks and stuff. I think
he can't go into sticks. What if we took a pig's heart or something and put him in the?
Let's just try to kill him.
I turn and fire an arrow.
There you go, Colin. Sleepy Canyoneer.
You fire an arrow. What's the damage on that?
Because
you hit
1d6.
Okay.
Plus
1d6 plus what?
4.
Oh, yeah. Dealing 6 damage to Yomiji.
Yeah.
He takes an arrow in the thigh.
So we're fighting this guy now.
Well, he is.
I produce my armlet of summer, and I create my fire armor.
Wreathing yourself in fiery air or armor, you feel the fire's warmth. Do you want to do another thing?
Yeah. I guess I don't...
Activating
is
pretty quick.
Once I'm on fire, I'm not sure what to do.
Oh, speaking of fire, the whole island's on fire. You lit it on fire, Quark, in the last episode.
I did?
Yeah, I forgot. Okay. Fire blazes all around you, choking smoke.
Why'd you light the island on fire?
I don't remember that at all.
You used a flaming...
Flaming sword?
Well, far sword.
Maybe we should take this fight through the portal.
I fire 5 fire arrows, which I guess are just arrows.
Yeah. Yeah, you can only do 3. Is 3 cool?
It says I can fire 5 arrows at once.
See, Demorge could do 4 with the Whisterer bow.
Demorge is so great.
And I think that used up his
I'll
only.
Take 3. It's fine.
Okay.
It was a really good job. I mean, the Whisper Arrow, I read the sheet.
2 of your arrows strike true. The other one, it just goes into the grass, the burning grass.
But two.
Yeah, 2 arrows plunk into each of his shoulders, dealing a total 19 damage.
Damn.
Yeah, I'm gonna venture you to death.
I call it my armlet of winter and call a snowstorm to put the fire out.
Whoosh. Whoosh! Smoke coalesces into clouds which sprinkle sleet onto the fire. It starts calming it in some of the less fiery areas, but the blaze is still largely burning. It's just more contained now.
I'm trying to help you guys.
It's helping. Right. But that doesn't take very long. That's like activating the
thing. Is that my whole turn?
No.
It's not?
No.
Then I go into a rage, and I use I do powerful blow.
Powerful blow.
And then he just starts talking about Unbreakable all night.
I mean, it's really good blow.
Going into your rage and striking a powerful blow, you do so. What weapon was that?
Mighty Greatsword.
What's the damage?
That's 2d8
plus 7. 2d8 plus 7. Dealing 23 damage.
Fuck you, Yomiji.
Decent blow.
Powerful blow.
If you're listening at home, kids, you just got to do powerful blow. Helps you beat the angels.
That's good. That goes out to 4 schizophrenic kids.
Put me in your note. That's all I ask.
He's not kidding. That's the terrifying thing is you're not kidding.
I don't want to be in it. It would be a guaranteed biopic, but I don't want it. am I up?
Sure.
I want to use my... I want to cast Mage Armor just because... it's not because I'm selfish.
cool.
I'm just weak. I need extra protection.
Touching your clothes, they become stiff and armorous.
And then if I have time left, I'd like to try to ensnare this angelic biatch with my armulet of spring.
All right, activating your armulet of spring, you attempt to do so. And he gets caught by the legs, by your vines, and kind of, he can't move so well. He's not immobile, but he's definitely kind of stuck, right. You know? Not great.
Okay, we got him where we want him, you guys.
Yeah.
Call him.
So he starts swinging his flaming axe around, and he's trying to just, you know, generally start fires and attack people in his general vicinity. He doesn't hit anybody, but he does manage to strike kind of the entanglements, and he slashes those off.
Lame.
And then he shoots eye lasers, but he misses.
Not your day, Yomiji.
No, it's not. That would be Colin's turn.
Yeah, I want to try to sneak up behind him.
Yeah. All right. Putting on your best sneakingness. You try and sneak up on him. You're not very sneaky, but you are behind him.
I am behind him, though.
Yep.
I stab him with my poison dagger.
With the poison dagger.
Use that poison dagger through my heart.
I hate it.
Stabbing with your poison dagger, your knife sinks into his angel flesh, but it doesn't seem to do any damage. It's weird. Just doesn't. Maybe it's because you weren't sneaky enough. Sorry. Was it be Jeff's turn, or is it Maureen's next?
No, Maureen's.
Sure.
Not today, Yomiji. I'm going to use my...
Was that your turn? She cast Magic Singer.
It's about to get really hot. Doesn't make any sense. Okay, I'm going to use my whisper bow.
All right.
And I'm going to whisper in Elvish.
You whisper with your whisper bow, but it only works once per day, so your whispering is in vain.
No, I wasn't.
I heard it.
Yeah.
You could still fire three arrows, but not the whisper bow style.
Okay. Well, I guess I do that.
Okay.
I also blow up a balloon because nothing matters.
Firing three arrows, two of them fly off the island, never to be seen again.
Goodbye.
But the third hits Yomiji right in his pectoral and deals four damage.
Ha ha! Burned.
Spencer, what a surprise! Moment of clarity.
Moment of clarity. Let's you.
It always comes after doing way too much powerful
turn
blow.
And look at the clock.
I cast Morton Kanan's Rock Bottom.
I cast Staring Too Long in the Mirror.
I summon sponsor.
Summon my spirit sponsor to help me get the powder out of the tile grout.
It lets you not be as crazed when you're in a rage.
Okay, can I use that and do a power attack?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so I take my mighty great sword and I summon my moment of clarity and I do where am I in relationship to him right now?
You know, in front maybe.
How tall is he?
He's 12 feet tall.
12 feet tall. All right, is he kind of standing with his legs apart?
Yep.
Okay, I come running in and I change it. I do a moment of clarity, far sword attack. I run between his legs and do a far sword and try to cleave him right in two, right up his wiener, like through his head.
You only got one far sword per day also, I think. So, you should be out.
Say what?
I think you only have one far sword.
Okay, then I'll just jump and do a great sword right through his crotch.
In summoning a brief moment of clarity, you weigh your options before launching yourself directly at his scrotal sack.
You've gone from Pretty Woman to Monster.
Wait, can I go back in time? Can I go back in time a little bit?
Sure.
Can I put a little Tarragon of Virtue on the tip of my sword just in case and see if that does anything?
Yep.
All right. I go over whoever has a Tarragon of Virtue. I put some on my sword, and just in case there might be like a poison, like or some sort of magical thing, and I do the same attack up the butt.
Swinging wildly with your power attack, your powerful swing is not as accurate as a normal barbarian style non-power attack swing, and just nicks him in the leg. It doesn't hurt.
What about the femoral artery? Don't angels have those?
Not angels.
It was a bunch of shit.
What about demons?
Powerful.
All right, it's 10:03.
Yeah.
When's it my turn?
It's your turn.
It's your
now.
Turn right okay, now. So check this out.
Make it count,
baby. Dust
maybe.
This bad boy off.
Make it count.
Why don't you pick on someone our size? Reduced person.
Oh.
Smallinus, ordinaris, giantus, angelus, cum humanus.
He does so, shrinking down to 6 feet tall.
Scribbledy dee, scribbledy doo, what once was large is now like you.
Cliffhanger!
What?
Colin.
Colin. Wow. Colin, the sleepy canyoneer. Aaron McGaffey. Spencer Crittenden. I'm Jeff Davis. Thank you, everybody. Your mayor, Dan Harmon.
Thank you, Zach. Zach
McKeever and Dustin Marshall and everybody here at Meltdown Comics. We love you all. Drive fast and take chances.